Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
The following is a presentation of the Belly Up Sports Media Network.
Here's what's cooking on today's Sports Stove Podcast. We have a jam-packed show for you. Major League Baseball preview takes us out east to the AL and NL East divisions. The NFL is in chaos right now. Free agency and trades. And NASCAR is headed to Bristol. We got a guest to talk about that later as well. That's what's cooking on today's Sports Stove Podcast.
From Belly Up Sports and the Belly Up Podcast Network, you're listening to the Sports Stove Podcast with your host, Vince Stover.
Hey, good looking. What you got cooking? How's about cooking something up in me?
Welcome in to an all-new edition of the Sports Stove Podcast presented by Righteous Felon Jerky. It's time to join the flavor revolution, and you can do it at righteousfelon.com. Use the code STOVE15, STOVE15, and that's going to get you 15% off your purchase. Welcome into the show. I'm Vince Stover, joined as I am every week by my dad, Dale Stover. Dad, we have so much to talk about. How you doing?
Good. Yeah, we really do. And like I said, there's a whole lot of things going on we won't even get to tonight. We'll have to catch next week. But boy, the NFL took the week by storm, that's for sure. And of course, baseball's about here. Fantasy leagues, fantasy drafts coming up, and playoffs and some fantasy sports. Just a lot going on.
Yes. And we could probably have a 2-hour show tonight if we wanted to, but we don't want to. We're going to get things started with the NFL. Free agency has opened with a bang. There's all kinds of movement, whether it be free agents or trades, what does not matter. There is movement everywhere, and almost every team has impacted their next season, at least on paper, in a positive way. It seems like there is a lot of big signings or trades for almost every single team out there right now. And I want to start with the quarterback picture, Dad. Kirk Cousins signing with Atlanta is not a big surprise, but I would argue that Russell Wilson signing with Pittsburgh is a little bit more of a surprise. Not total surprise, I wouldn't say, but I guess a little bit less expected than Kirk Cousins to the Falcons. And I'm intrigued to get your thought, because I know you hate Kirk Cousins you think he's a horrible quarterback. Well, maybe now that he's in Atlanta, you actually will admit he's good. I'm not sure which way you'll go with this. So talk to me, but let's start with Kirk Cousins and then let's get into Russell Wilson.
Well, I think Kirk Cousins is a good fit for Atlanta. I think that's what, you know, they needed. They need some stability there. They have a lot of players around him. And so he'll give them a veteran presence. I have a Falcon fan at work that I see a lot. And boy, he was just ecstatic about it there. And I think this will be a good spot for Kirk Cousins, and definitely a good thing for Atlanta. I think it'll give them stability, and we'll see how that goes. Russell Wilson, you know, we talked about him last week, and the Steelers were one of the teams I mentioned that I thought would be a fit. And I think it'll be a really good fit. You know, it may just be a one-year thing, but I think he'll fit well there. I think the coaching staff will be good for him there. And, you know, the fans will take to him real quick. And that's kind of what he needs, a coach and fans that are really behind him. And I think he can have a good year. So a lot of quarterback movement, though.
Does Wilson beat out Kenny Pickett for the starting job?
I'm sorry?
Does Wilson beat out Pickett for the starting job?
Well, I think Russell Wilson will be the starter.
Well, I mean, it's going to be a competition. So he's going to have to beat out Kenny Pickett in order for him to win out that job. And, I mean, I'm surprised that you so quickly say yes. I think Russell Wilson should beat out Kenny Pickett. But I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I'm interested to see how that one shakes down. We'll watch it throughout the spring and see how things go. Yeah. Kirk Cousins going to Atlanta frees up Minnesota, and they go out and sign Sam Darnold. Darnold has never lived up to his draft position. That being said, a lot of people still like Sam Darnold. How do you sit about Sam Darnold taking over in Minnesota, especially as a Packer fan?
I was real excited about Sam Darnold going to Minnesota. No doubt about that. They've got their franchise quarterback now, and you know, they're going to have to do something. I assume they'll do something in the draft as far as someone in the future. But I was all for Sam Darnold to the Vikings. We'll see how that goes. Like you said, he's got potential in some ways. He hasn't ever lived up to all of his potential. But, that was kind of an interesting signing, but I'm not sure who else they really could have got. I know some Viking fans that really thought they would try to keep Kirk Cousins or would keep him and then bring somebody in, you know, but that didn't work that way. And that wouldn't have been best for Kirk Cousins. So,
We'll see. I mean, I don't think the Vikings will be horrible next year. I think they're still better than the Bears. That being said, if I'm a Vikings fan, I don't get super excited about Sam Darnold. That's for sure. Gardner Minshew goes to Vegas. They cut Jimmy Garoppolo. So I would assume that Vegas is looking at Minshew as their starter for next year. And same thing as Minnesota, probably looking to draft somebody as well. You got guys like Bo Nix, JJ McCarthy, Michael Penix, those kind of guys that are there. So I'll be interested to see how that one shakes down, but I'm happy for Minshew. He's deserved an opportunity to be a starter somewhere. Joe Flacco signed with Indianapolis, so he takes the Gardner Minshew spot up there as well. Jameis Winston goes to Cleveland. Drew Locke goes to the Giants. And there's other movement, of course, as well.
Tyrod Taylor went to the Jets. Which is good because they got a backup quarterback because Rodgers, you know, doesn't take all the snaps at practice anyhow. And there's a good chance, looks like he may be out on the campaign trail and have to miss a few practices. So having a good backup, the Jets are really on the ball on that one.
Oh, boy. I don't even know what to say. I'm going to move on from that one. Let's go running backs, though, quickly. Saquon Barkley stays in the division, going to Philadelphia. Aaron Jones stays in the division, going to Minnesota. It's intriguing when you watch these guys move around, and I really hate losing Aaron Jones on the Packers. I think he was an important piece of that team. Josh Jacobs comes in at this point in his career. Is he a better option? Maybe. I don't know that you can clearly say yes. I don't clearly say yes. But I think Jacobs is good. He's young, which helps, of course, as well. But my goodness, I hate to see Aaron Jones leave. Derrick Henry goes to Baltimore, which he thought he was going to get traded to Baltimore last year and did not. Austin Eckler goes to Washington. There's a lot going on out there right now when it comes to running backs. What caught your attention with the running back free agency so far?
Yeah, that's one of the things that's made it most interesting because there are such big names there. And like I said, Barkley going, I think he'll really help the Eagles, but going into the division, that was a little surprising, you know, of course caused some feelings there. as far as Aaron Jones, I agree. I mean, that was a real loss for the Packers just because of community and just, everything he meant to the team in a lot of ways. But as you get all the information, you know, what the Packers wanted to do just wasn't going to work for him. I hate it that he went to the Vikings. We'll see how that works out for him there. I think Jacobs is going to be a great addition. I think he has more years left in the tank than Jones did. And again, I think he's a different back than Jones is, but I think LaFleur knows how to scheme things for certain people. And I think he's going to just do real, real well there. I think Derrick Henry, that could really be something at Baltimore. If he's got a couple years left in him, you know, with the team they've got, that was quite the move there. Joe Mixon to Houston, that won't hurt them at all as far as depth and, veterans are concerned. Pollard to Tennessee was interesting. You know, they lost a running back and picked up a guy there that I think can be a help to them. So very interesting in the running back market.
Yes, it is. Mixon, by the way, I think that's an awesome pickup for Houston. I really like what Houston's been doing last year and this year. Wide receiver-wise, there's some movement. There's a deep wide receiver class in the draft that we'll start getting to probably next week. But Calvin Ridley signs with Tennessee. Gabe Davis goes to Jacksonville. Curtis Samuel signs with Buffalo. I think that's a massive pickup for Buffalo. Devontae Parker to Philadelphia. I like what Atlanta has done, not only in bringing in Cousins, but they also signed Darnell Mooney and trade for Rondale Moore to add to their already, massive offensive skill talent out there. So I'm interested to see kind of what Atlanta looks like. They're making a run for that division, which is not a great division last year, and trying to challenge Baker in Tampa. For sure as well. Anything on the wide receiver class that excites you?
Well, I think Jerry Jeudy to Cleveland was probably maybe a really good pickup also there. I know they had tried to get him earlier. And like you said, I don't think there was as much movement there because this is a big class coming in the draft also. But Ridley and all the guys you mentioned, Washington picked up Zach Ertz, which again is an older guy, but very stable. And, it was tight end. So that was all good.
Yeah, defensively, there hasn't been as many big names on defense. There have been some, of course, but a lot of just really solid additions. Again, Philadelphia just this afternoon went out and got Devin White, who was with the Buccaneers before. They add him to a class that they've just been adding on, and continue to be good. CJ Gardner-Johnson re-signing. There's a lot going on. And Patrick Queen to Pittsburgh. There's so many names here. I'm trying to pick out the important ones. But nonetheless, there are teams out there making a lot of moves right now, and we still have a whole draft to go. And I'm intrigued to see now once kind of the clouds and the dust settle, to be able to go through and try to figure out who needs what now. Because, I think the Packers signing Xavier McKinney was massive. They desperately needed a safety, and he's a great upgrade for sure on there. And then, as our good friend Kevin Wilson just says, where in the world's Dallas at? The Cowboys go out and steal Eric Kendricks, the linebacker. But outside of that, very quiet free agency so far for Dallas, which I guess you could argue they don't need a whole lot right now, in my opinion. I don't know, Dad. I know you hate Dallas. So can you say anything nice about them?
I'm sorry?
Can you say anything nice about Dallas, or is it all bad?
Well, Dallas hadn't made a lot of moves yet, I don't think, really. So, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I don't think that it's one of the teams that hasn't done a lot, but some of the teams in their division have. The Giants have tried to make some moves, made some, and the Eagles definitely have. And Washington's brought in a lot of players, definitely trying to. So some teams, I think, don't know that it's all big names, but like you said, Some people that really needed people brought in a lot of players. New England's one of those too. They brought in a lot of guys. Whether it'll make all the difference or not, you know, I don't know from there. And some teams made probably a bigger splash with being able to re-sign key players. Tampa Bay was one of those, re-signing Baker Mayfield, re-signing Evans, re-signing Winfield. That was big for them. They really kept some key pieces in place. And it's been a lot of movement, and a lot of people were helped. Houston, again, brought in a lot of people, some defensive people also. And, I think everybody helped themselves some. So it'll be very interesting now going into the draft, because everybody will refocus a little bit on their needs.
Yeah, the Chargers, a team with a new coach, been kind of quiet also. Gus Edwards gets signed to a two-year deal. Will Disley, the tight end. There's just not much going on in L.A. either right now, which I'm intrigued by and curious to see kind of now what they try to do with the new head coach and what direction they'll go. So far, not doing a great deal of things, needless to say. All right, let's get into Major League Baseball. There's plenty of NFL to talk about. We'll continue to talk about it over the next several weeks. We will get into draft prep here in the next week or two as well. Let's get into our conclusion of our Major League Baseball preview covering the AL and NL East divisions. And let's start with the American League today, Dan. And we're going to start up in Toronto, Canadiens A. And they've got a pretty much very similar team to last year. Your Springer, Bichette, Guerrero, Jansen, Varsho. But they bring in some guys too. Justin Turner to DH. Isaiah Kiner-Falefa at third base. Kevin Kiermaier there at center field. Pitching-wise, Gausman is looked at as one of the top-tier pitchers in the league this year. Jose Berrios, Chris Bassitt, Yasai Kikuchi, and Alek Manoah, who was horrendous last year. Currently slated to be the fifth pitcher in Toronto. They won 89 games last year. Their win total is set at 86.5 this year. Dad, I just kind of get tired of thinking Toronto's going to be good. It seems like they should be good, but man, they just keep falling short. I'm going to go, I'm probably going to go over 86.5, but not by a whole lot.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think I'll go over 86.5, but not a lot. But Toronto's got a lot of talent, and I think that division is going to be very, very competitive again. Last year was a surprise that you had four teams really fighting it out. And I think this year they're going into it. That probably will happen again. Maybe all five teams will be fairly decent, even though Boston won't be as good. Toronto's one of those teams that, you know, they could just dominate the thing if everything goes right, but I don't know that that's what will happen. So.
Yeah, I agree. Baltimore, a young, exciting team. They've got some savvy vets there as well. Last year, they broke 101 wins. They've got young guys like Gunnar Henderson, Adley Rutschman, Jordan Westberg, Jackson Holliday, the most talked about prospect in quite some time, is around as well. They add in guys like Santander, Mount Mountcastle, Austin Hayes, Ryan O'Hearn, Cedric Mullins. So they got veterans and young guys pitching. They bolstered their rotation with Corbin Burnes from Milwaukee. Grayson Rodriguez, a young prospect, he came up last year and had moments of greatness and moments that just were not great. But the expectation is for him to be really good. Dean Kremer, and Tyler Wells, Cole Irvin round out the Baltimore pitching staff. Their win total is down at 90.5. They won 101 last year. The expectation is the Yankees will be better. Toronto's going to be good. Maybe Boston shows up. I'm guessing is why it drops that low. I'll go over 90.5, Dad. I'm in on Baltimore this year.
Yeah, I will have to agree with you on that, 90.5. I really like Baltimore. A lot of young players, and, you know, they played well last year. When they started doing good, everybody thought, well, surely that won't last. But they just played tough all year long. And, I think that shows they know how to play. And, you know, they've definitely got the talent to do it. So depending on injuries, I think Baltimore will be right there at the top of their division.
Yeah, I mean, I just didn't think their pitching would hold up, but it did. So congrats to them. Fun team, though. They really are a fun team to watch. A lot of these young guys are just entertaining and top of their position, skill, all that kind of stuff, too. So I'm intrigued to watch them this year, and I still cheer for Corbin Burns, even though, I don't know, I wish he would have. It doesn't matter. Okay, let's move on. Tampa Bay, they won 99 games this year, Dad. There's a lot of expectation that they kind of fall this year. But, you know, we've talked a lot about betting against Tampa. Can you bet against them? They always seem to be there at the end. I mean, 99 wins last year. I did not see that coming. They've got a lot of the exact same guys. Yandy Diaz, Brandon Lau, Randy Arozarena, Isaac Paredes. They lose their shortstop to major legal issues, Wander Franco. Jose Caballero comes in to replace him. He's another young guy, and I think you're going to know his name by the end of the year. Pitching-wise, Zach Eflin returns, Aaron Civale from Cleveland, Zach Lytle, Ryan Pepoy, and Jacob Waguspak. And the pitching, listen, you never know these guys from Tampa until they show up. So as much as I try not to go against Tampa, Dad, I just don't think they're going to be that good this year. 84.5 is the number that's given. I'm going to go low 80s, but I'm going to go under 84.5 for Tampa this year.
Again, you know, they've got a lot of the same players. You know, they did lose their good pitcher last year, and he's not back yet. I'll go over 84.5, maybe not a lot. Maybe it'll just be 86 or 87. But I think they'll – excuse me.
Yeah,
I think they'll stay in the hunt.
I mean,
with everything there. So again, you may be right. They may fall off, but like you said, it's hard to bet against them. And so I'll go just over 84.5.
All right. Sounds good. Boston, they won 78 last year. I thought they would be low 70s. But they just kind of stuck around for a long time. Again, a lot of similar names, but new names as well. Rafael Devers, of course, is still there. Trevor Story is past his prime. Tristan Casas is an interesting guy there at first base. They bring in Tyler O'Neill. Pitching-wise, you know, Bello's the guy that everybody talks about. They just signed him to an extension. He should be good. But then you got Pavetta, Cutter Crawford, Garrett Whitlock, Tanner Houck. There's not much that inspires you when you look at Boston. The win total is at 77.5. They won 78 last year. I thought that was more, like, I thought they overachieved at 78. So I'm going to go again, mid to lower 70s again this year. I'll go under 77.5.
excuse me. I'll just go over 77.5. Right. Boston. excuse me again. I don't think they've turned it around.
Right.
At all, but as we've been studying for fantasy, they've got some players there. Pitching will probably be their problem, but I'll go over just a little bit with 77.5.
Yeah, and they got hurt. They had a good pickup in Giolito, and he got injured, and you know, just bad luck for Boston. The Yankees, Dad, nobody likes the Yankees. But that being said, they only won 82 games last year, and that was not – what was expected. They bring in Juan Soto, which should help them drastically. They also bring in guys, Trent Grisham, who's not expected to be in the starting lineup every day. He's going to be a really good pickup for them. And I could see him stealing playing time, whether it be a DH or even in the outfield for them. They've got some young guys as well. Anthony Volpe had moments of really good last year. And also, pitching-wise, they did improve. Marcus Stroman comes in. Carlos Rodon is healthy. Clark Schmidt is still there. Nestor Cortez and Cody Petit right now. 93.5 is the win total for them. So everyone's expecting them to be second behind Baltimore. Oh, man. I think Soto's going to have a great year. If Judge can stay healthy, that's sure going to help him out. But 93.5, Dad, that's a really hard number for me. I'm going to go under. I think they hit 90 wins, but I don't think they get to 93.
Yeah, I'll go under 93.5. They will be better. They're one of the teams, like you've talked about, that can't be as bad maybe as they were last year. And they have added, you know, they've got some players if they can stay healthy. But 93.5 is a little high. I think everybody's going to be bunched together a little more around that 90 realm. So I'll go under on that too.
Yeah, I mean, if Gerrit Cole was healthy, I'd feel a little bit better. But now with his injury, him going to be out for, they say, 1 to 2 months. But other people are saying, you really got to wait. We don't have all the information on that yet. So that question mark just really worries me because Gerrit Cole is an amazing pitcher. Let's jump to the NL East, Dad. Atlanta is the team to beat. 104 wins last year. Their win total is set at 101.5 right now. They bring back all the good guys, Acuna, Albies, Riley, Olsen, Azuña, who I hate, Murphy. They bring in Kalenic and hoping that he'll find his potential. Michael Harris is still there. Arcia will be the shortstop. Pitching-wise, Dad, Spencer Strider is phenomenal and rose to the occasion last year. Max Fried, of course, is there. Charlie Morton, I think he's about 52 years old now, but Charlie Morton's still there. Chris Sale comes in from Boston. What does he have left in the tank? And Ronaldo Lopez rounds out the rotation. 101.5. I like it, Dad. I'll go over. I think Atlanta's just the best team in this division. I think they do get challenged by Philadelphia, but I'll go over 101.5.
Yeah, I'll go over that too. I think they're one of the best teams. When you look at their lineup up and down, you know, I will go over 101.5, and Atlanta should do, you know, they've got a lot of talent.
Health is everything in Atlanta, as it is for pretty much every team, but health is a big deal in Atlanta. Miami, 84 wins last year. Again, I think that was overachieving. Arias, they bring in Tim Anderson, Josh Bell, Jake Berger, Jazz Chisholm, who never stays healthy, Brian De La Cruz, to name some of the guys there. Their rotation has the potential to be really good. They also had the potential to be really bad. Jesus Luzardo, AJ Puk, Yuri Perez, Edward Cabrera, and Trevor Rogers there. And so at the end of the day, 78.5, I don't know. I think upper 70s is where they need to be. So I'll say under, but barely.
Gotcha. What did you say the line was on them?
78.5.
Yeah, that's right there. I'll go over just a little bit because, again, I think the pitching may come through, and if they do, then they're going to be okay because they've got a good pitching staff. So we'll go just over 78.5, right at maybe at 80.
Okay, three teams left, Mets, Nationals, and Phillies. Let's go to the Mets next. 75 wins last year, did not get to where people hoped they would be. But again, a very similar lineup to what they had last year. Francisco Alvarez, the catcher, is somebody to watch as potentially being very, very good and rising to be, I think, a top three catcher this year. Pitching-wise, though, is a massive question mark for the Mets. Severino, Sean Manea, Jose Quintana, Adrian Hauser, and Tyler McGill. If that doesn't boost confidence, I don't know what will. 81.5 is the number, Dad. I'm going to go under because of those pitchers.
Yeah, I'll go under that too. I think the Mets may do better this year, but just looking at that number, I'll go under 81.5.
All right, the Nationals. Here you go. Bold prediction. Dad, you think the Nationals are going to be World Series champs this year, right?
I may have to back off on that just a little bit. So
I kid. All right. 71 wins last year. I actually like this team, Dad. I like them a lot. CJ Abrams, Lane Thomas, Keibert Ruiz, Joey Meneses, Joey Gallo, Jesse Winker, Nick Senzel, Luis Garcia, and Victor Robles. The pitching staff, Patrick Corbin, Josiah Gray, Mackenzie Gore, Jake Irvin, and Trevor Williams. Dad, their win total is at 66.5. The division's not easy, but I think Washington is going to be one of those teams that, you know, overachieves this year, get them in the mid 70s and actually have a respectable season. So I'm going to go over 66.5, and I think comfortably over.
I don't know about comfortably over, but I'll go over. They do have some young players. I think hopefully they'll be trending in the right direction. That did sound a little strange with you saying, I really like this team. And then you mentioned Joey Gallo. I'm just not sure how that fits in. But otherwise, they've got some good young guys, no doubt about it. And if they excel, they'll be in good shape.
All right, let's get to the Philadelphia Phillies. 90 wins last year, high expectations. They ended the season well. And again, they look very similar. Do you have tornado warnings going off in your house? Thought I heard tornado sirens. Okay, Kyle Schwarber, Trey Turner, Bryce Harper, Alec Baum, JT Realmuto, Bryson Stott, Nick Castellanos, Brandon Marsh, and Johan Rojas for Philadelphia. The pitching staff is pretty solid. Zach Wheeler, Aaron Nola, Ranger Suarez, Taiwan Walker, and Christopher Sanchez. Dad, they got to be better in, from the start, I think, for Philadelphia. 90 wins is a lot. That's what they got last year. The line's at 90.5. I'm going to go over 90.5.
Yeah, I'll definitely go over 90.5. I mean, when you look at the talent they have, again, you know, as we've been studying for fantasy drafts, they've got, you know, a lot of players. Some that are proven, some that have potential there. But the Phillies should be good. We've got a good friend that's a big Philly, big Phillies fan, and I talked to him, and, you know, he's going to always be a pretty optimistic, but, you know, felt very confident. So I think they'll be good. I think they could maybe push Atlanta a little bit, but Atlanta definitely is the better team to start with. But the Phillies have been the team that's gone further in the playoffs lately, so we'll see.
All right. Yeah, there's too many Philly fans in the world, but we'll let them still be around. That's perfectly fine, of course, as well. We've got several in our fantasy league, and this Sunday, Dad, fantasy draft live, 8 o'clock, right here on the Sports Stove YouTube channel, and looking forward to that. It'll be a good time having some guests on and drafting live with Kevin Wilson and the gang as well. All right, Dad, any closing thoughts before we send you on your way? And I still feel like I'm hearing tornado sirens in the background. So hopefully all is good up there in Ohio.
Yeah, we, like you said, there's so much we could talk about tonight. Boy, we've had a lot of response of people watching us, and there's even a question or two I wish we could get back into, but need to move on to Bristol. So we'll let you do that. And been an exciting NASCAR season so far, too. You've kind of got me back in it, being in a fantasy league there, and I've enjoyed that. So, of course, a lot to talk about next week. We'll be into the madness by that time. Yes, and as well as who knows what will happen in football. So we will go from there. Baseball season will be started. And so we'll go from there. But, nope, thanks for having me. And, boy, like I said, more than we could talk about tonight.
Yeah, brackets come out Sunday, and we'll be ready to talk about that on Wednesday, of course, next week, getting into all the depths of that. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we are talking NASCAR, and we got a great guest on for you tonight as well. First, a quick word from our sponsors, Righteous Felon Jerky. Say hello to America's most wanted craft beef jerky. Over 15 flavors with all kinds of character. The number one jerky gift box, and all natural black Angus quality made right here in the U.S. of A. Taste the flavor revolution at RighteousFelon.com. Use the promo code STOVE15 at checkout. That's RighteousFelon.com. Promo code STOVE15 at checkout. Welcome back into the Sports Stove Podcast presented by Righteous Felon Jerky. Join the flavor revolution at RighteousFelon.com. Use that code STOVE15 at checkout. You're going to get 15% off your purchase. It's now time for our final segment of the night. We like to call it our final lap. And joining me to talk all things NASCAR, he's the host of the Stage Break Podcast, the one and only Josh King joins the show. How you doing, Josh?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing, Vince?
I am doing awesome. Came on to your podcast this year. I got to listen to it and was told about it by a friend and pulled it up and listened. Great content. and great coverage of racing. And so I'm excited about this conversation tonight, Josh. And I want to start with the blanket question of who has impressed you so far this season that maybe you weren't expecting to impress you?
I think some of the people that you maybe look, you hope that will be impressive, but you really doubt they will be, are some of the rookies, you know, especially mm-hmm. coming out the gate. And Carson Hocevar has been an individual that has come to my lists a lot of times, not because he's done anything spectacular yet, but a lot of because he hasn't done anything that crazy either. You know, little mistakes here and there, but they've shown a lot of speed out of that Spire Motorsports organization that they just haven't had in a while, and I mean, if ever, you know. So especially with Corey LaJoie and the 7, with all the experience that he has, you expect maybe there to be a little bit of a pecking order in that just his experience and his time with the organization, that it would kind of reflect that you know, Corey's maybe a little bit higher up and Carson has to play catch up a little bit. And but even from last season when he filled in with Legacy Motor Club to this season now with a new organization, he's done really well in just a handful of races. You know, again, nothing that I think is going to make the headlines, because obviously it hasn't. But at the same time, he's not been a backmarker either. He's kind of been in the hunt. He's got some airtime and has done pretty well.
Yeah, he's run some really solid races. Like you said, not perfect necessarily, but if you're not talking about him negatively, it's probably a good thing.
Absolutely.
Because he has a little bit of a reputation.
Oh, yeah.
And he has been, he's been right there. Like you said, he's gotten airtime where you've seen him for a run. I was thinking just even back in Phoenix, you see him for a run and you're like, wow, Hocevar's there. And he's got a shot at the very right. least as well. What about guys like Michael McDowell? He's a guy that I always keep coming back to. The team has been good for sure. But it just seems like, to me, McDowell is a guy that's easy to cheer for.
Right. Yeah. He's just that nice kind of guy. A guy that I was a fan of that I really hope to get a ride this year is Trevor Bayne. And I've been a fan of his since he won the 500 back in 2011. But Michael McDowell's good friends of his, and he's a similar kind of person in that he just got a great personality and, you know, from appearances, you know, good character and someone that you can really get behind kind of for a long time as the underdog. And so whenever he would do anything good, it was, you know, something that you could, you know, just about anybody could rally behind him. But he's, since his win at Indy, at the Indy Road Course last season, I think he's got a lot to prove. He's got a lot to, maybe just some momentum that some people might wonder, okay, was that a one-off thing? Or is this something that's going to translate into a solid season? And they've made a lot of headway. Something I've noticed just even as, you know, the 34 and the 30, I think it's a 38, Todd Gilliland, yeah. if I remember right, just that, you know, the Front Row Motorsports team, typically two cars, sometimes three, they have that 36 car, I think it is, that's running part-time. And something that they've just been further up the ladder, further up the leaderboard than they have been in seasons past. And so Michael McDowell, I think, is, like you say, a great guy that you can root for, but I think something that he displayed at Indy shows the kind of skill that he actually has, and that the racing that has happened and the cars that he's been given, the speed that they haven't had is not necessarily reflective on him as a driver. And so as we see them getting better equipment, I think we're going to see a lot more success out of that organization as a whole, but especially Michael McDowell with the experience he has. Which, and just to kind of highlight Indy, that's the opportunity to make a mistake. Like, you know, an oval, you got four turns. A road course, you have entry and exit of many turns, all of them different. And so you have to be on your game. You cannot slip up and make a mistake, or else there will be somebody behind you that'll pounce on it. And if I remember correctly, that was Chase Elliott, you know, someone who has done very well at road courses. And Michael McDowell, and I think there were some little slip-ups, but Chase had some as well. So it kind of balanced out. And that's not something that happens by accident. A super speedway, you can kind of luck your way in. Not on a road course. So for him to get the win, that really shows that the problem is not him. The problem has been some speed in out of that organization. And I think we're going to see a lot more speed out of him this year.
That organization changed partnerships from RFK to Penske.
Yes.
What does that say about RFK? And what does it say about Penske? Can we read into that at all?
A little bit. I mean, they're not going to do anything for fun. It's a business deal. So I think the fact that if they've had a partnership with RFK and they were mid-pack with the you know the occasional solid run and then the win at Indy, like we just talked about, you know, it's not all bad. But and RFK too, as an organization, has shown a lot of improvement over the last couple of years, and I think we're going to see even more this year, as we've already seen to some extent. I think the thing is that worth the investment, right? If you're spending all this money in these partnerships and it's not getting you the kind of increase in speed and data that you're looking for, why would you stay with it? You know, go somewhere else. And of the Fords. Rick Ware Racing, I think, runs Fords. I mean, they're not the ones that necessarily you're going to invest in, right? And the Fords that have been performing well are at Penske. So it makes sense that they would do that. And I think that may be part of why we've seen some speed out of those guys, because they've got this new partnership and data sharing that's going on. And if I remember right, it's a tier one Tier one, I forget the term. It's not partnership, isn't exactly it, but the tier one team aspect. And so they're getting information that not everyone else gets. So they've I'm not sure how much, but they've invested, I'm sure, a lot of money into this. And you know they're not doing that on a whim or a guess. I think the Penske organization has shown itself to be fast. Obviously, having won the championship last season, and I think the year before that, right? Wasn't Joey Logano in 22? So they know what they're doing. Just because Ford's maybe a little bit behind the curve a little bit in speed doesn't mean that they can't get it done. So I would, if I were them, yeah, I would rather work with Penske than with RFK.
Who is the most disappointing Hendrick driver so far this season? Chase Elliott or Alex Bowman?
Oh man.
For the record, they're top 13 drivers right now. Elliott's nine, Bowman's 13.
Yeah, but that's the kind of like thing. They're not bad, but it's guys. But man, it's if you're comparing a nice dinner to filet mignon, I mean that's different. But these guys, I don't know. They're like you say, they're not bad drivers, but because you're getting compared to William Byron and Kyle Larson, it looks bad. So I think I would lean towards Alex Bowman. A little. Chase Elliott, I think, you know, he had a good qualifying run this last race at Phoenix, but the results haven't shown. Alex Bowman overall, just not that impressed with as far as performance goes.
Right.
But I think both of them, obviously, it's been a subject of conversation a lot last season and already this season. But I think Chase Elliott is getting a little bit more momentum than Alex is at this point.
Truex and Hamlin have kind of been the mainstays at Toyota as of late. It looks like Reddick and Gibbs are ready to take over that role. Obviously, Truex is still running well, and Hamlin's still running well. But I don't know. It seems like Reddick and Gibbs are at the front every single race right now.
Absolutely. And love to see that at Vegas. With Tyler Reddick hunting down Kyle Larson, that was just some masterful racing that we saw between those two guys. The different lines they were running, and Reddick, I think I would put on the same, not necessarily same level, but really close to Kyle Larson. The way he, the knowledge that he has, the skill that he has, the analytical mind, the calculated mind to know what he needs to do, where he needs to put the car, the skill to run right up against the wall. All of that stuff puts him right up there with Kyle Larson. I think maybe some hindrances in regards to manufacture, speed in the car, all that stuff may have played into why he hasn't been as dominant as Kyle Larson. But like you say, we're seeing some advancement there. I think Denny Hamlin's still in there. Martin Truex, maybe a little. He's one that I thought would do well at Phoenix and then initially was really slow, but you know, he fought and they adjusted the car and he showed up there at the end. So he's not out at this point. And you always wonder when someone's playing around with retirement, how invested they are. Yeah. How are they at their prime? Are they still competitive? You know, they have the competitive spirit, yeah, but are they going to be able to, really at the end of the day, keep up with all these young guys? Ty Gibbs, just a lot of talent and a lot of speed that they've shown. He was one that I thought would be similar to Carson Hocevar, that he kind of came up with a bad reputation. And I thought, how's he going to handle this? Is he going to keep his nose clean, or is he going to ruffle some feathers along the way? And he's obviously been ruffling some feathers with Joey Logano, but it's not been as much as I expected. And I think he used that time wisely to get acclimated, get some respect within the garage. And now he can kind of flex his muscles and race a little bit more aggressively with these drivers and then, you know, show some respect back with him. So now he's getting to utilize some of that talent and speed that they have without as much potential of, causing drama and putting themselves in a bad spot where someone's going to pay him back. I think they're probably the ones that are going to be the new face of Toyota at some point here soon. But I think Denny Hamlin, especially, he's got a lot to prove. He's got a lot to race for. He's still looking for that championship. I don't know that he'll ever stop looking for that until he stops driving. So,
yeah. And I love the access we get with Hamlin. I don't think he's the greatest podcast host, but that being said, the content that's there is a lot of fun to get that insight. And I think it's helped him kind of grow his brand as well. Having that show, of course,
absolutely.
A lot of people invested into that. Let's talk about Phoenix. Phoenix last weekend, I watched the race. I wasn't enamored by it, I wouldn't say. I don't hate Phoenix, but I also – hey, be quiet. I also don't love Phoenix. And so I don't know. What were your thoughts? My family's out of town, so I got the dogs down here with me. So
okay.
But that being said, what was your thoughts on Phoenix and overall your general thoughts on Phoenix?
I'm a fan of Phoenix. Just overall, it seems like there's not another track like it. The dog leg is so interesting, and I don't know, it glues you to the set. It glues you to the screen as you're watching it, because you're wondering who's going to get wrecked, who's going to, you know, are they going to bang doors, and somehow more often than not they survive. So I enjoy Phoenix. I used to do some iRacing, raced in a league, and actually won a race at Phoenix. So that's probably biased me a little bit towards Phoenix, because I feel like I have a little bit of a basic idea of what the drivers are dealing with. Yeah. It's obviously not anything real world, but you know, until someone proves me wrong, I'll stick with it. So, it's something that I don't know. I like the track. It just seems like with Phoenix, it's a short track. They're flat banks. It's not very steep banked track, and so it forces the drivers to really manage their throttle well, take care of their tires a little bit. And that's a whole conversation separate of, you know, is the car too planted? Does it have too much grip? Is there not enough tire fall off? Do they need more horsepower? That's kind of been the stuff on the radio this week. So there's a lot of questions there, but all that to say, you can't run Phoenix flat out like you can Daytona. It forces them to drive the car a little bit more. So, just with the variety of the turns one and two, really wide, a lot of space. You can arc the turn well. Turns three and four, you want to hit that line. Maybe on old tires, if grip is a factor, you can, you know, run to the outside and pinch somebody down so that they can't get a good exit and can't put the throttle down and can utilize that to your advantage. But I think it just overall, I'm a fan of the track. I think it's a pretty cool track. I love the cactus light at the start finish line. That's pretty cool. So, and overall, I thought it was a decent race. But then again, we're comparing that probably to Atlanta. Atlanta, I don't think anything is going to compare to Atlanta this season, except for maybe the next Atlanta race, maybe. Yeah. Although it probably won't be as good as what we saw. So whenever we're judging everything against Atlanta, they're all going to fall short of that. I mean, that was just such an awesome race. But for what you should expect out of a short track, that's a really fast 1 mile track, flat banked, I think we got it. So, I didn't see as many drivers contending for the lead as I would have wanted, But that's some of the nature of the track. You're going to have some cars that excel. They get the setup right and they can pull away. They can maintain their tires better. And that's just something that happens at these tracks.
If I'm a Ford guy, if I wasn't, Christopher Bell would be my favorite driver. Like yeah. Every time I hear this guy do an interview, I watch the Netflix thing and just he's quiet. He just goes out there and does the job. And in Phoenix, you saw it in that second stage. He was just dominant. Once he got rolling, it's like,
yeah,
you didn't expect anyone to catch him. At least I didn't. What do you think about Christopher Bell and coming off a two straight championship possibles being in the final four the last 2 years? And right now, I mean, he looks so good in Phoenix.
Oh yeah. Solid competitor for sure. Something that I appreciate about him is I don't think I mentioned this in one of my episodes. I forget which one it was, but I don't think he's the one that's going to, at the end of the day, if he's in second place, last lap, and he's got to do something to get the checkered flag, get the win, I don't think he's going to wreck a guy to do it. I think if he's going to get the win, he's going to do so fair and square. Now, that's not to say that he won't nudge and he won't bump. He won't side draft aggressively. He won't try to get the car loose, but he's not just going to wreck a guy. Yeah. You know, he's not going to door him into the wall or anything like that. That's just not the type of racing that you see out of him. And what that means is, he's probably not going to get as many wins as he could because he's relying on, you know, clean or semi-clean passes to get it done.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, who hates him, right?
Right.
He doesn't have too many enemies on the track, I don't think, because of that.
Right.
And so the wins that he does get, it's either because, like we saw at Phoenix, it's got a dominant car. It's really fast. He can get up there and he has a car that can run multiple lines, can get around cars quickly, can get the lead and keep the lead. And he didn't start there, but they worked on the car and got it good. So, and because of that, it allowed him to excel. If you have him in a second place position, I think he'll do everything he can to upset the car in front of him, but he's not going to end his day. Right. And I think there's other guys that would, they would do something that's going to mess them up and know that they're not going to finish in second. And they're going to finish further back, but whatever it takes to get the win. And, you know, neither here nor there. It's just the driving style, the racing, the racecraft, the race style. But I think a lot of people appreciate that out of him.
Yeah. And I know he was on Junior's podcast this week. And one thing that Dale Jr. brought up was that his pit crew is better this year. And you're seeing it early on, of course, as well. Bristol's up next. I love the Bristol night race, which is not this weekend, but
right.
Overall, I grew up in Tennessee. So for me, Bristol was kind of the track you always kind of cling to. That being said, it's a completely different race than what we've seen so far this season. And there's the guys that are good and the guys that are always good there and things like that. But I don't know, general expectation, I guess, for this weekend at Bristol.
I think we're going to see some pretty typical short track racing. Bristol, you know, we're going away from the Bristol dirt, so it's back on concrete. I think there's the vast majority of fans. Yeah, I think I am.
Yeah.
I am. It depends on which way I look at it. If I want something that's entertaining and interesting and different, then I want the dirt.
Sure.
But from the fan perspective that tries to put myself into the seat of the driver, there is absolutely nothing to prepare them for that track. And right. I can imagine how frustrating that is to be racing a one-off event that you have no way to really get ready for it because there's nothing else like it. And it's like, it's not really necessarily a good reflection of how you are as a race car driver. If this was a dirt circuit, obviously it'd be different, but because it's a one-off thing, I can imagine why it wouldn't be as enticing as from a driver or a team perspective. And along with that, it's just, you know, I think maybe it's getting slight, maybe the reason they've done away with it, maybe a little bit gimmicky. It's just something that we're just trying to draw some more fans, get some more viewership. But I think that being on the concrete now is because we've done the dirt for a while. Now we're back on concrete. Those numbers are going to go right back up because all the, you know, the fans that love the original are now going to be watching it. So, at least be more interested in watching it. So I think I'm more on team concrete than team dirt, myself. But you know, if it weren't dirt, I wouldn't be upset about it. But sure. All that to say, it's going to be pretty typical short track racing, really aggressive, really physical. It's going to be a battle of attrition all night long to keep the car clean. I did some statistics for my show this week. And basically, let me make sure I get them right. Out of the last 10 races, there's been an average of 10 cautions per race. And again, out of the last 10 races, the average lap number, average time that the last caution took place was on 18 to go. So basically, you've got a lot of cautions, a lot of carnage, right? They call it the last great Coliseum for a reason. And all that to say, I'm guessing a short run car is going to excel because typically there's a caution with, you know, 15 to 20 to go. It's going to be a short run to the end. So not to say that that's going to happen, but statistically that's more often than not what's happened. So I think, you know, obviously when we get a late race caution, the aggression goes through the roof, and especially at Bristol, that just amplifies it even more.
So when we look at the race for this coming weekend, we like to look at it from a fantasy perspective. And so drivers, we use NASCAR.com fantasy. And so there's five drivers we got to put in. What is your suggestion for our listeners? Doesn't have to be the five that you're putting in, but the suggestions you would say for the listeners, you know, these are guys that to consider in the fantasy spots.
Yeah. I've got, this is basically the same information that'll be on this week's show. So if there's any crossover, sorry, you're going to hear it twice, but it's just really, I mean, I've already done the research to who I think is going to be good. I think Kyle Larson, you really have to keep an eye on, and it's kind of, some people might say, well, why would you say Kyle Larson? You have to watch him every week, and you do, but statistically, out of the last three races, he's got three top fives. That's obviously really good. He has a single win out of the last three races, and he's led 229 laps. Mm-hmm. So just if you're that much towards the front, eventually you're going to get there. And he did once. And he knows how to drive, as all these guys do. But you know, just with the good equipment and a good driver, you expect him to qualify well and be towards the front. Denny Hamlin's another one I've got on my list with Toyota. He's got a win and a top five and three top tens out of the last three races. And then Christopher Bell. So these are guys that we talked about. Christopher Bell with the win last week. He's got momentum. He's the pole sitter from the fall race. So a lot of speed, as well as leading 330 laps, which out of the last three races, he's the leader in laps led. So he's also been towards the front, put himself into a great position. Hasn't been able to pull through and get a win, but does have two top fives out of that. The third race there, I think he finished like in mid pack, maybe a little bit further back. I can't remember exactly what happened, it wasn't typical of all the rest of the numbers. So there was a mistake, or you know, speeding on pit road, or an incident, or something that messed him up. Chase Elliott is one that's on my list, not necessarily that I think is going to get up there and get the win, but because he's shown a little bit of speed in qualifying, as like I say, it's his numbers, his finishes, I don't think are an accurate representation of maybe a little bit of momentum that they're getting on that team. He's got a top five and two top tens at the last three races at Bristol. So statistically, he's done well here in the past, last few races. And I think if you combine that with maybe a little bit of momentum on their team, I think you might see him running towards the front. So, and I guess maybe there's five, right? Is there five on the fantasy?
Yeah.
So, man, who are we going to pick now? I'll say Chris Buescher.
Okay.
Chris Buescher, let me look. I've got this up here right here. He's got, out of the last three races, he's got a win, two top fives, and, you know, let's see here. If I pull this up, it's 11.3% laps led, but that doesn't tell me much. Anyway, he's got some decent numbers. If you just look at average finishing position for him on like driveraverages.com, he's there towards the top of the list, not the very top. But you know, again, kind of like what we talked about earlier on, RFK gaining some momentum, just seems to be improving each year. I think him along with Brad working together and Brad coming onto that organization has helped a lot. The three wins that he got last season, he obviously can, he knows how to drive. He can get it done. So it's just a matter of them coming with a fast car that can do it.
So I'm going veteran heavy this week. Subject to the change after qualifying and practice and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
I will say that because I changed my lineup last week after everything was said and done. But right now I've got some guys that have had good experience at Bristol and good wins, maybe not the best cars this year. So it's a little bit of a risk, but Kyle Busch has been really good at Bristol in the past. The car, like I said, in Richard Childress Racing has not been great, but he's Kyle Busch, and I anticipate at some point it's going to click, and why not Bristol? Same thing with Keselowski. He hasn't won in a really long time, right. But he has a good history in Bristol as well, and so I've got him up there, Truex up there as well, and Logano, as those are four guys I'll probably keep. And then right now I've got McDowell as my fifth. I've got Noah Gragson as my garage guy that I can sub in. I will probably change one of those guys out because that's a lot of Fords. But I'll probably change one of those guys out after qualifying. But I don't know. You know, Chevy last week, and it's a different track, completely different track than last week. But Chevy last week was not impressive, and Toyota was. Ford has been, I think, fairly consistent this year. They've not been great. Blaney's been really good, but I've already used him twice, so I'm not putting him in this week. That being said, I'm going to go with the veterans. I like experience at Bristol, and I just feel like it's a little safer than, but I think guys like Hosovar, guys like Gregson, those kind of guys, this is where they could make their name, you know, coming out and pulling one off at Bristol, and they're aggressive and solid and, you know, all that kind of stuff too. But I'm going to lean towards veterans this week in my fantasy lineup, and we'll see how it goes. Maybe I won't do that ever again.
Yeah, thankfully you can, I think you have right until the race starts to switch it up. So you're not locking yourself in too tight just yet.
Yeah. All right. Tell us about the Stage Break podcast, how it came about, and then kind of what to expect from it as our listeners tune in now after hearing you on the show.
Absolutely. It came about because I was looking for a NASCAR podcast that I wanted to listen to, and all the ones that I found were honestly just really too long for me to invest in them. They were at least an hour, sometimes two. And as much as I want to sit down and listen to that much podcasting, I just didn't have the time for it. And I thought, well, there needs to be a podcast that's shorter, and I couldn't find one. So I thought, well, I maybe I could do one. And I was going through a little bit of a shift in, you know, just some of the things I was investing my free time in. I thought I'd give podcasting a try. So I've grown to really enjoy it, and I've had a lot of fun with it. If you want more information about it, you can go to thestagebreakpodcast.com, and it's got some information about the show. You've got some recent episodes that you can go and play directly from there. You can find the show on all major podcasting platforms, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, iHeartRadio, YouTube Music. You can find, there's a YouTube channel as well if you would rather use YouTube. It's all the shows are on there also. And we just try to take you know, NASCAR content and put it in a short, concise episode that you can listen to pretty easily. Maybe something going back and forth to work, maybe you know, mowing the lawn or something, you know, doing some work around the house, whatever. You got half an hour. I try to shoot for half an hour episodes. If you got half an hour, you can listen to a show. And we just talk about some interesting topics, NASCAR stories, news headlines. You know, I try to, you know, build in my own unique perspective into some things that's going on that may be different than some other people. You know, don't just want to repeat what the NASCAR.com says, right? That's not really much of a show. So, you know, just try to look at things interestingly and maybe give some perspectives that maybe other people don't have. So, and we do weekly episodes every Friday morning. They are released, and, you know, go check it out.
Yeah. The Stage Break podcast. I've listened to it. I found it on both Apple and Spotify. And this is, I'm weird. I use two different places, but anyways, I got it both on there. You're also on social media, seem relatively active on Instagram.
Yes.
Especially, and that's where I've seen you the most at least. So where can people find you on socials?
Yeah. Instagram and Facebook, you know, Threads is trying to compete with X, I think, but not doing such a great job just yet. Yeah. So I'm on Threads if you use that, but primarily Instagram. A lot of what I share on Instagram is also posted on Facebook. So if you use Facebook more than Instagram, you can find almost all the same content there. Hasn't gained a lot of traction on Facebook yet. Not exactly sure why, but I haven't really done any kind of marketing or anything like that to raise awareness of it. But yeah, primarily on Instagram, and you know, posting stories there, reels, whatever. Sometimes I have you know, questions. It's interactive content just to get your all's opinions on some things that's going on. You know, I didn't do this, but you know, things like, you know, Bristol dirt versus concrete, which one would you rather watch? You know, things like that, just to kind of get from a fan perspective, what you all like to see happening. So, you know, mostly Instagram, if you want to connect with me there. You know, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. Like I said, YouTube, if you want to subscribe to that as well, whatever works best for you.
Awesome. He's Josh King. Check him out. Stage Break Podcast. Again, I don't say it if I don't mean it. Listen to the podcast and enjoy it. It's good content. You can tell you don't just sit down on a Thursday night and just record 30 minutes and hang up. You put research into it. You got great content with it as well. And so I encourage race fans, or soon to be race fans, or whatever it may be, go check out the Stage Break Podcast. For sure. I want to remind everybody as we wrap up, righteousfelon.com. You're going to get the best jerky you can possibly get. And you get it at a discount. If you use the code STOVE15, you get 15% off, and you will not regret it. We're going to wrap up today. That's all that we got. We went a little longer than normal even. And so now Josh won't listen to the show, but no, I'm just kidding. make sure you tune in Sunday night for the Sports Stove Fantasy Baseball Show. We've got a live draft going on this week. Monday night will be the Sports Stove Local Hour covering EKU sports. And then, of course, next Wednesday night, the plan is hopefully to be back on our regular schedule next Wednesday night. You can catch as we talk March Madness and NFL Draft there as well. We thank Josh. Thank my dad for coming on earlier. And we thank you for listening. Until next time, we will see you around the sports stove.